subject ended up in this talk. It all started back in 1963, the end of my sophomore year at Danbury State College in Connecticut, when it was small and called Danbury State College. My roommate and I decided, for various reasons, to take a trip to Germany, which was not something that young women did back in 1963 on their own, so it was quite unusual. We went by ship to Rotterdam, because believe it or not, the 12-day crossing of the Atlantic Ocean by ship was cheaper than an airplane ticket at that time. So there we were aboard this ship, the Moskau from the Holland America Line, and it was the adventure of our lives. And as is usual on board a ship like that, there is the gala evening where everyone dresses up and there's a fancy dinner and music and the captain makes a speech and etc. So we were enjoying this evening, and we were out several days already and we're becoming acquainted with people from different places. So we were sitting at a table with people from Holland and Germany and England and Australia. And suddenly two, three young women, about our age or perhaps a little bit younger, went up on the stage, and they were really cute. They were wearing prom dresses, I think. Strapless and puffy 1960s style skirts, and their hair up and makeup and everything. And they took the microphone and were very giddy and cute and said, "We just want to say that America is the greatest country on the earth." At which point, my friend Sally and I looked at each other and didn't say a word and kind of sank down in our seats, feeling quite embarrassed. And that scene I never forgot. And why? Why were we so embarrassed? I asked some other people, describing the scene, how would you feel when you heard that? And one person said, "Well, I feel very proud. I feel really proud." Explain, proud of what? Well, proud of my country, and proud of those young girls that they had the courage to get up there and say that. So I realized there are definitely different reactions to something like that, different feelings about patriotism. And I've also been warned about giving this talk that I'm touching on a very touchy subject, and people can get very emotional about it, so I should be careful about what I say. So I hope I don't offend anybody. The reason why Sally and I kind of wanted to disappear at that point was because the way it came across, it seemed so arrogant, so really arrogant. And here we were trying to learn about other countries and other people and making friends. And by their standing up there and putting America on this pedestal, if you're up there on that pedestal, that means you're looking down at everybody else. And that was really pretty uncomfortable for us. But it might be difficult for us not to feel superior compared to other countries and their people. After all, our country is indeed called the greatest country on earth, the leader of the free world, the land of the free, protectors of democracy, leaders in medicine and scientific research, etc. Others look to us for aid and support. Our genes, our Coca-Cola, our music, McDonald's, and US brands are coveted all over the world. And sometimes Americans seem to have a sense of entitlement just because we are Americans. Being American is part of our personal identity. If you insult my country, you insult me. And I noticed a few things, like, I'm sure you've heard this line in some movie or another. "You can't do that to me, I'm an American." This sense of entitlement. My mother came to visit us early on when I started living in Berlin. And she went to a department store, came back, and she was very upset because she could not understand why she could not pay for what she wanted using her U.S. dollars. You hear things on the news. 257 people died in a plane crash. 3 of them were Americans. I'm like, well, who were the other 254? Do we even care who the others were? The main thing is 3 Americans died. A person by the name of William Shenstone wrote, "The proper means of increasing the love we bear our native country is to reside some time in a foreign one." Well, I sort of did that. The result of that first trip to Germany, 3 years later, I married a native Berliner, West Berliner, and ended up living in Germany from 1967 to 1998. And I realized over time, I didn't consider myself to be particularly patriotic, but I realized that in subtle ways I was probably more patriotic than I realized. There are things that happen in everyday life that brought that out. If I had an idea, something I really wanted to do, and I got all excited about it and started sharing that with somebody during, I would get back, "Das geht nicht, das macht man nicht, das kannst du nicht machen." That doesn't work, you can't do that, you can't do it that way. And that really upset me, hearing those words, because that was so un-American. I mean, you can't tell me that. You know, anything's possible. That's what we believe. You have an idea? Go for it. The sky's the limit. At that time, or around that time, I came to the conclusion that we needed to buy a house. We had 2 children, 1 on the way, and I had come back home for a visit and looked around and saw that my friends by this time also had 1 or 2 kids and their starter home and, you know, a good American life. And here we were living in an apartment in Berlin, and I'm getting scolded for leaving my baby carriage in the hallway. And, you know, I thought, no, if I have to live in Berlin, and it seemed obvious at that point that we were not coming back for a while. So I realized that this part of my life and raising my children was going to happen in West Berlin. And then I decided that probably was my mission, because if everybody left West Berlin, there wouldn't be anybody there, and it would ruin the whole thing of democracy and this island of hope in the middle of the communist territory. So somebody had to live there. So I guess we were dead, or part of it. But then I thought, then on my terms, we should at least have a house. So I told my husband that, no, I think we ought to buy a house. Now at that time, statistics were that 15% of Germans owned their own homes. That's not a really lot of people. So he said, well, yeah, I'd like a house too, but das Staat nicht, das kann man nicht, that's not America. It doesn't work like that. And so I told him, well, don't tell me that. My grandparents were both immigrants from Italy. They never learned to read or write English. They always spoke it with a heavy Italian accent. But in the end, they owned 4 houses in Connecticut and 2 in Florida. So we can buy a house for sure. And a couple years later, we did. But that is part of the true spirit of being American. There were other things that I found myself standing up for us. A friend of ours whose name was Albrecht Prinz zu Hohenlohe-Langenberg. Took me years to be able to say that, right? And he was a prince and a historian. And he used to like to tease me and say, oh, Americans have no culture. And of course I fell for it. And we start arguing with him that of course we have culture. Maybe our church isn't from 1150, but we still have culture. So a lot of these things really brought out what was important about being American. But patriotism is a very complicated issue. And any patriotic new viewer will be confronted on how to uphold our union principles and be patriotic at the same time. Before we can tackle this conundrum, we'll have to define patriotism, which is a difficult task. Words that are part of the definition of patriotism are love of homeland, loyalty, respect, and duty toward country, including the willingness to fight and die for your country. Though we use the words nationalism and patriotism interchangeably, there are some differences in definitions and concepts. Nationalism is defined as a pride in one's own country and superiority over other countries. The desire by a group of people who share the same race, culture, language, etc. to form an independent country. There are various ways people love the country, just as there are various ways people love their spouses or love their friends, says Thomas Cushing, professor of sociology at Wesley College. Patriotism is so complex that academicians have loosely broken it down into categories, although they don't all agree on these labels. There is devout patriotism, unconditional loyalty to country, also called blind patriotism because adherents will support the country no matter what, espousing the ideology, my country, right or wrong. Then there is symbolic patriotism, the attachment to symbols and rituals, such as the flag and patriotic songs. Then constructive or critical patriotism, the belief that the best way to love one's country is with constructive criticism of the government. But I would add one more, which I labeled visionary patriotism, the belief in the values upon which our country was founded, that all men are created equal and have a right to freedom, happiness, and justice. These are emotionally charged concepts. Sinclair Lewis wrote, intellectually, I know America is no better than any other country. Emotionally, I know she is better than every other country. And it is impossible to talk about these concepts without getting into politics and war. The attributes of patriotism and nationalism have been mixed and manipulated by leaders and politicians on many levels as a means of achieving their own goals of wealth or power. Samuel Johnson says, patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. The loyally blind patriots with the attitude, my country, right or wrong, have no tolerance for those who criticize or oppose the actions and policies of the government. I'm sure you've heard, if you aren't with us, you're against us. Yet it is the duty of what I call the visionary patriot to hold our government accountable when it is acting contrary to the beliefs and ideals upon which our country was founded. He knows that our country is not perfect, and he strives to make it better. That means action in the form of questioning, protesting, resisting, searching for truth, at the risk of being labeled unpatriotic or seen as a traitor. I saw, both in the Vietnam War and in the struggle to stop it, learned that patriotism includes protest, not just military service. That was from John Kerry. The Declaration of Independence so clearly explains the necessity of war, when it is necessary to protect our rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The ultimate patriots are those who give their life in service to our country. They're our heroes. The real political motives for waging war may be questionable and disguised under the mantle of patriotism. How does that work for a youth movement? I came across a sermon given by Dan Harper, UU, Palo Alto, California. And he talks about war. He writes, "Recently, I met and have been corresponding with Reverend Sheen Holland. He is a major in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve, currently based in Southern California, and preparing with his unit to be shipped to combat duty. In one email message, he outlined a Unitarian Universalist theological grounding of military service, and he has given me permission to read it to you." He wrote, "In striving to come to a coherent universalist theology that captures both our hopes for a peaceful world and the reality that at the moment it is not, I see war as an organic reorganization within the web of life." I have to repeat that. "I see war as an organic reorganization within the web of life. It is a reorganization mediated by humans mostly through our shortcomings and dysfunctions. What this means to those of us who participate in war is that we are witnesses to the source of humanity's dysfunctions, war. Warriors possess a knowledge of an aspect of humanity that most do not want to carry and hopefully won't ever have to. However, the nature of war is such that those of us who have pledged to protect our country don't always get to choose which conflict to be in, and we have very limited power as activists while we are in the military. Those who have more power as activists, many members, typically and understandably, do not possess an intimate knowledge of warfare. This is a sketch of my theological grounding that warriors and non-warriors really have to work together on redeeming conflict, hopefully before it happens." So how can we be patriotic and adhere to our UU principles? If our form of patriotism is that of a visionary, we will value highly the ideals expressed in our Declaration of Independence and strive to make our country better. As Unitarians, we endeavor to uphold our principles in our congregational and personal lives. And I think Eleanor Roosevelt wrote something on patriotism that really sums it up. She wrote, true patriotism springs from a belief in the dignity of the individual, freedom and equality, not only for Americans, but for all people on earth, universal brotherhood and goodwill, and a constant and earnest striving toward the principles and ideals on which this country was founded." Just to compare that to the seven UU principles. First principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Third principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And that was the end of my talk. So now